This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 15.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
This is Angie.
In this episode, we talk about the runner's high and why we love it. And in the quick tip segment, an iPhone app for runners, recommended by one of our listeners. So we're a little bit late in getting this episode out. We are actually on a little trip, and we're sitting in our car trying to find a wireless internet signal and finishing up this podcast. So it's definitely taken a little bit of creativity and being intentional to get this done, but you that are in our listening audience are definitely worth it, and we know you're really going to enjoy this episode about the runner's high. So we're visiting Angie's brother in Wyoming, and he doesn't have internet. How can people live without internet?
I guess they do all the time. They probably get way more done than some of the rest of us.
I know. So in the mountains, hiking around a little bit, and haven't got to check my email in about 5 days, so I'm definitely feeling like I'm off the grid. Anyway, we're back on the grid, although not totally, podcasting from our car. So I guess if we can do it from here, we can do it from anywhere.
That's right.
Have you enjoyed our little vacation?
Yes, for the most part. It's been good to see family and friends and enjoy the beautiful scenery here in Montana and Wyoming. And it's a little bit difficult traveling with small children.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the most relaxing experience in the world, putting up with all their demands, but, you know.
It's good when they're sleeping in the car, though.
Yes, sleeping, and we've rigged up a movie system, so.
So they can watch a movie while we drive, right? It's so long of a drive from Missouri to Montana.
Yeah, it's hard for a kid to just get their mind around a long trip like that, so.
Right.
We try to make concessions for them, but sometimes we're still ready to pull our hair out.
So how's the exercise and running been going here on vacation?
Well, it's a little hard being out of your normal routine, and kind of looking forward to that part of being home again, just getting back into the normal exercise and, you know, sleep and all that good stuff that we take for granted when we're at home in our comfort zone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Angie loves her comfort zones. Well, the first day we drove for like 10 hours and we left really early in the morning, like at 5 in the morning. So we didn't really exercise at all that day, just sitting in the car. And I just felt just wiped out, just not complete, not healthy at all, just kind of fighting a headache and backache and all that. Well, the next day I got up, and we were staying the night in Colorado Springs, and I went on a little run up and down the hills there in Colorado Springs. And then when we had to do that long drive, I just felt a whole lot better having exercised that morning.
Yeah, my day always goes a lot better if I get my exercise in.
Yes. All right, well, you want to really quickly just give some shout-outs to people in our listening community?
Yes, I heard from Brock. He's from Canada, and he's done multiple marathons, but he's getting ready to do the Seattle Marathon in a couple of days on the 26th of June. And while he was training for this marathon, he was raising money for Team in Training. Now, I don't know if anyone's familiar with this, but it's a great organization that raises money to detect and prevent blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma. So he has raised over $5,000 while training for his marathon. So we just want to say good luck with your marathon, Brock, and great job with raising money for that organization.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
The next person is Emily. She's from Illinois, and she says, "Hi, Angie. I've listened to your podcast numerous times at work, and I love it. It's very entertaining. I've done the Chicago Marathon twice and am training for it again this year. The last two times were sort of disastrous. My first marathon, I got injured around mile 16 and could barely walk, let alone run. But I pushed through it and finished, about an hour and 20 minutes slower than my earlier training pace. I was disappointed but happy at the same time since I finished. Somehow, through the process, I inspired my dad and older sister. So at the age of 53, my dad started working out and training for the marathon. But of course, I couldn't let him have all the fun, so we trained a lot together through the summer. It was an amazing bonding experience, one I will never forget. But throughout the training, I was struggling with some major lower back pain with my sciatic nerve caused by car accidents in previous years, and some knee pain. My time wasn't very good the second time around either, and my dad actually finished before me. But again, I was thrilled to say that at least I wasn't a one-timer. Now I'm training again and reading up on anything and everything I can get my hands on to have a really good and, most importantly, injury-free marathon. Thank you for your podcast. I find them very interesting and often relate some of your information on my blog, Running Design.
It is so fun to hear people's running stories and just get feedback. That's probably the most enjoyable thing about this podcast.
Yes, definitely. I always like connecting with people, whether they, you know, email me through our blog or whether I get a message on Facebook. So that's a lot of fun. I think we're up to 780 fans on Facebook.
Something she mentioned was running her third marathon and being injury-free, and that's something that I know you talk about a lot, is especially having a nursing background, is remaining injury-free, and we've done quite a few podcasts on topics about that. So I'm glad that Emily is finding value and getting help here at Marathon Training Academy, and glad you're getting your family inspired to run also.
Yes, that's wonderful.
All right, well, today we're going to talk about the runner's high, and this is a very exciting episode. We had a lot of fun putting this together, so let's get right into it. Okay, well, today we're going to talk about Angie's drug of choice, endorphins, the runner's high, and why she loves it so much. And all of you fanatic runners out there, marathoners, you probably love it too. So you're going to give us some good scientific information behind how it all works. So before we jump into it, since this is the runner's high, let's go ahead and play our runner's high music.
Wikipedia defines the runner's high as the production of endorphins that occurs during strenuous exercise. Endorphins attach themselves to areas of the brain associated with emotions. Endorphins also can be related to relaxation and pain relief. Now, when I started to research this topic, it can get pretty deep, and my notes are beginning to look like a medical paper of some sort. So I definitely want to interject both some subjective information or people's, you know, actual experience with the runner's high with what the research is saying about the phenomenon of the runner's high.
Let's do it.
So this topic is something that researchers still debate, but anyone who's experienced it obviously is a true believer. And once you've experienced the runner's high, it can turn a grueling run into a mountaintop experience. So some of the things we want to cover in this podcast is, does everyone experience the runner's high? And what are the physiological or physical processes that take place within the body that create this experience? Now, Webster's 1978 dictionary defines the runner's high as a feeling of euphoria that is experienced by some individuals engaged in strenuous running and that is held to be associated with the release of endorphins in the brain. I liked what a New York Times article described. It said, "Every athlete has heard of it, most seem to believe in it, and many say they've experienced it."
So have you experienced it?
Definitely, yes. It definitely comes on with different intensity during different workouts, but I start feeling something after mile three. It's like suddenly my body starts to work together as one. I start
kicking it in high gear.
A bit, yeah. It's like your body stops complaining about all the various aches and pains. It starts working as like a well-oiled machine. Your mind starts to disassociate with the physical aspect, and it's free to just
dream and free associate and float. And
yeah, exactly. You feel like you've just entered another zone.
Okay, so I know what you're saying now. Your body's just going, and your mind is not really telling it to keep going, thinking about all the aches and pains, and your mind is more off thinking about all kinds of new things. It's just like driving in the car. I mean, if you've been driving a while, you don't even think about your driving. You can think about all kinds of other stuff, and driving is just second nature.
Sounds like you've started to experience it too, huh?
I guess, now that you describe it.
Yeah, and as the length of your runs and the intensity of your long runs increases, you start to experience an even greater, that to a greater extent, I guess. Hmm. Like after you've had a 10 or 12 mile run, you just feel like you could take on the world. Your body may be tired, but you have this mental, this emotional edge that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
And, you know, after you finish a marathon, you may feel like physically you've been hit by a truck or really rough, but you just still feel like you have conquered the world. Mm-hmm. And it's just this extreme emotional high that you have.
Wow.
So definitely there is something that goes on, kind of a disconnect between the body and the emotions or mind. And so that was what I found in the research as I was looking into this. Many people have heard of the drug morphine. Morphine is a drug that most people know is associated with powerful pain relief. And as a nurse, I've used it many times with patients. Even though it's been around for 150 years, in many ways, it's the drug of choice for extreme pain. But it wasn't until the 1950s that it was discovered how morphine works in the body. They found that humans have receptor cells that naturally occur in the body that bind to the drug morphine. And so basically the researchers thought, hey, these receptor cells are present in the body. I wonder why they're there. Maybe the body produces something that's similar to morphine. And this is when the endogenous, which is just basically a fancy word that means it's produced internally by your body, these endogenous substances known as the encephalins and endorphins were discovered. Now, these chemicals are present during the stress reaction, and they also help to regulate many of our body systems. But it was found that endorphin levels also increase during strenuous exercise. Now, endorphins are produced by the pituitary and hypothalamus glands in the body and resemble the opiate drugs in their ability to produce pain relief. And they also give us a feeling of well-being. It wasn't until 1975 that the specific mechanism that the endorphins went through was discovered by two different groups of researchers. So basically these two independent groups at about the same time started coming to the same conclusions about these endorphins in our body. But now medical technology has caught up with exercise lore. Researchers in Germany, using advances in neuroscience, reported in a recent issue of the Journal of Cerebral Cortex that folk belief is true. Running does elicit a flood of endorphins in the brain. Now these endorphins are associated with mood changes, and the more endorphins a runner's body pumps out, the greater the effect. Leading endorphin researchers, not associated with the study, said they accepted its findings. The data also showed that endorphins were produced during running and were attaching themselves to the areas of the brain that are associated with emotions, in particular the limbic and prefrontal areas. So there's this physical reaction caused by running or strenuous exercise, these endorphins are produced and they're attaching themselves to the areas of our brain that experience emotions. The limbic and prefrontal areas, said one of the researchers, are activated when people are involved in romantic love affairs or when you hear music that gives you a chill of euphoria, like Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 3. The greater the euphoria or that feeling of a high, emotional high, the runners reported, the more endorphins were found in their brains.
So who said that that piece of music gives them euphoria?
Well, this was one of the examples used by the researchers in this study. For everyone else, it may be something different. But there are certain pieces of music that tend to stir people in general. Orators or, you know, people even like Hitler realized the power of music, and they would use it to stir up the crowd before speaking events and things.
Oh, that's what a pep rally is, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So there is a power to music.
Gets people in a state of hysteria.
Right. You know, you see some concerts, the mosh pits and everything. These people have just worked themselves up into emotional frenzy.
Right.
So running or strenuous exercise can affect those same areas of the brain that produce those emotional highs.
Wow.
Some people have these really extreme experiences with very long or intensive training, said Dr. Boecker, who is a runner and cyclist. And he said he feels completely relaxed and his head is clear after a run. This is also what happened in the study subjects. He said you could really see the difference after 2 hours of running. You could see it on their faces. So I'm not saying that you have to run for 2 hours before you start to experience this. For me, it starts to kick in after 3 miles. You know, for every person, this experience is a little bit different because all of our emotions, all of our physical systems are built just a tiny bit differently, the way we react to things. But it will start to kick in, you know, early on, and then get more intense after you've, you know, had a longer duration of exercise or a long run.
So getting into my mind as I'm hearing you say this, I can be out at the latter end of my run, getting closer to the end of the route, and a certain song comes on the playlist, and it just really just opens up the endorphin bank, and I start getting these huge thoughts of grandeur, like I can just run for miles, and even imagine everybody running out of their house and like cheering me on and running next to me, like I'm some kind of YouTube video we're going to make or something where the whole neighborhood starts running. And I feel like leaping.
Right.
Then I hear you in my head saying, don't overstride.
Sorry. So, killjoy, huh?
Yeah, but it's the combination of the endorphins that have kicked in after, probably 3 miles, plus the music that has pumped me up so big, and then my imagination.
Exactly. And even I've experienced during a marathon, you know, there'll be different spectators holding different signs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll read some kind of sign that in my daily life I would not even give a second glance to. And it has the power to bring me to tears.
Wow.
Because my emotional system is already tapped into so heavily through this exercise. So
wow.
It doesn't happen, you know, it doesn't have to happen just through music. There can be different stimulus, you know. I mean, someone could say, good job, and you're like burst into tears kind of thing.
I believe in you. Thank you.
Spontaneous hug. No.
Yeah. So maybe we've stumbled on some amazing new technique for getting people to improve, you know, in their personal life. You just get them to run so far that the endorphins kick in, and then turn on some psychology in their MP3 player, where they're listening to an audio book that's like some guru, like Tony Robbins or somebody, you know, giving them little self-help suggestions and or business tips or whatever, and they can just internalize it and I don't know, maybe some kind of new life-changing technique we should try.
Yeah, that does sound good. I mean, maybe that's why people listen to us and they don't think we're completely boring, is because they're on a long run and, you know, anything sounding good.
You guys rock. That's right.
We do, thanks.
You do rock, Angie.
Now, they're doing a follow-up study on this to see if running affects pain perception or the way we experience pain. And this researcher says there are studies that have showed enhanced pain tolerance in runners. You have to give higher pain stimuli before they say, okay, this hurts. So I guess what I gather from all of this is that, you know, it's true. A person can really fall in love with running, and nothing can compare to how you feel when you finish a run. Everything becomes possible. You feel this great exuberance and joy and completely and totally energized.
Man, there'd be world peace if everybody was a runner.
I think so. Now, like I'm saying, the same experience is not going to happen for everyone. And if you're not at the place, if you're a beginner, you're not at the place where this is kicked in, okay, don't just turn us off as some crazy lunatics. Just keep going, and hopefully you'll experience this too. There's a small percentage of people who actually experience negative emotions with this running high, but they're definitely in the minority. So I'm sorry if that's you and you can't relate to us here. But
yeah.
Yannis Kouros, who could be classified as a legend in the world of ultra running, once explained what he was feeling when he was running. And this was in an article that was published by Ultra Running Magazine. He said, "Some may ask why I'm running such long distances. There are reasons. During the ultras, I come to a point where my body is almost dead. My mind has to take leadership. When it is very hard, there's a war going on between the body and the mind. If my body wins, I will have to give up. If my mind wins, I will continue. At that time, I feel that I stay outside of my body. It is as if I see my body in front of me. My mind commands and my body follows. This is a very special feeling which I like very much. It is a very beautiful feeling and the only time I experience my personality separate from my body as two different things."
That guy is sick. No, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I can relate to this to a certain level. It's like I've been on runs before where I have lost part of the miles.
What do you mean?
I'll come to myself like...
You mean time just goes by fast.
I've lost part of the run. I don't remember doing part of the run.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it's like there's this dissociation between your mind and your body. And your body's like on autopilot. And your mind has gone somewhere else.
and blissful.
Yes.
Puff the Magic Dragon lives by the sea.
I guess to a certain extent. Now, I don't recommend disassociating for every run because you should be paying attention to your running form. And if you want to improve like speed and things like that, you need to be thinking about your running. But for long runs especially, this dissociation, this running high is very valuable because otherwise a lot of us wouldn't be able to get ourselves through those high mileage runs.
Yeah. And plus all the technical aspect, like running form, breathing. I think after you run enough, that stuff comes second nature.
Exactly.
You don't have to go out there and be constantly conscious of it as you're going.
Right. Exactly. The important thing is to listen to your body. And if you're experiencing discomfort, you know, go through your body systems. Why is this happening? And, you know, if there doesn't seem to be a good reason, then, you know, kind of the mind over matter type thing.
Right.
But to ignore a serious injury coming on or serious pain, things like that.
It's also very important to listen to this podcast.
Self-promotion.
Okay, let's get back to it here.
Other runners have experienced the same type of thing. One English teacher said that during one of the last miles of the Ice Age Trail run, he found himself running far faster than he had all day. He says, "I wasn't even conscious of my feet touching the ground as I crested the knoll ahead of the finish line. I wasn't running. It was as if something much larger than I was running me." So generally, most people claim that a runner's high is when the mind takes over the body and the unconscious leads the mind. Yet there are many more aspects that people attribute to the running high, so every person's experience is a little bit different. Although the existence of the endorphin effect during exercise is an established fact, like I said, the experience is subjective or is a little bit different from person to person. Some runners don't get this elevated mood that's associated with running. Now, when a person first starts their running journey, the body often associates running with an unpleasant experience. You may have to force yourself out to run and drag yourself through the entire workout. But there is going to come a point when your mind and body start to crave the running experience. So that leads to the question, does the mind become dependent on running, or does the body form the dependence? Now, the answer may be both. A person may even get to the point where, for all medical purposes, they're addicted to running. I have the book Lore of Running by Dr. Tim Noakes, and it's almost like a textbook of running. It's huge and very detailed.
The most boring book I've ever seen.
You haven't even read it. It's actually very good, but it takes a while to wade through.
You got to be a doctor to know what he's saying.
No, I wouldn't say that, but it's definitely more information than most people want to know. But it has some great insight on the psychophysiological or the mind-body aspect of running. He states that running gives people a powerful support system that enables them to cope better with their unique life stressors. Interestingly, also, runners as a group show increased emotional stability. They score low on neuroticism and anxiety. They have above average intelligence. They're more imaginative and self-sufficient, and they tend to be more introverted. So now we can feel really good about ourselves, you know, we're more creative and intelligent as a whole than the general population.
So is he saying that's a good thing to be introverted?
An introverted person is basically someone who thinks deeply, I would say, and is more focused on and more aware of what is going on inside of them.
Okay. But not somebody who never leaves their house.
No, we're not talking about that. We're just talking about more of a deep thinker. You know, you think of an extrovert, someone who's always people-oriented, a lot of times they have trouble sticking with goals, and they tend to be more externally focused instead of internally focused. So I would say an introverted person, while there can be extremes, is a little bit more self-aware. So that's what I took from that.
Let's save it.
Two psychologists from the University of Illinois use social, psychological, and physiological factors to determine a person's involvement in running. So basically, they looked at social, mental, and physical aspects of running. And it was called the Carmack-Martin's Commitment to Running Scale. And they looked at the following factors. Number one, time spent thinking and reading about running. Distances involved in traveling to races and the frequency of competition. The number of marathons run. Number of friends who are runners. The amount of money they spend on books and magazines about running. I guess I'd score pretty high this week on that one. Money spent on running equipment and accessories. the extent of changes in eating, drinking, and other lifestyle patterns made to accommodate their running, and the duration and intensity of running itself. So they took all these factors into account. So some sociologists studied these factors, and they came up with four levels of running commitment. Group one, running was the most important commitment in their lives. This group ran at least 64 kilometers or greater than 40 miles per week, and they raced often. Most of their friends were runners, and they read about running at least weekly. The second group, running was a crucial commitment. They ran between 18 to 64 kilometers or, you know, around 12 to 39 miles a week, and they raced frequently, but they were less involved in the running subculture than the first group. The third group, running was basically a hobby. They also ran about the same as the second group, but they had no interest in the running subculture. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you can kind of, you know, think about maybe what group that you fit most closely with. Group four, running was an occasional activity. Runners only ran when they felt the urge, and they often stopped in the winter when it wasn't convenient. So you can think about your commitment to running based on these groups. Dr. Noakes, who wrote The Lore of Running, believes that the attraction to running is primarily physiologically based or physically based. Some people will run as long as there's a desired goal. And in fact, but some people would rather cut off their leg than give up running. I've read an interesting interview with Dr. Tom White. He lives in Colorado, and he had a degenerative condition in his lower leg from an automobile accident. And he got to the place where he couldn't run anymore without severe pain. So he chose to have part of his leg amputated and continue running on a prosthesis.
Wow.
So you can read the full interview on the Runner's World website. We'll post a link to it on our blog. It's a really interesting article. You know, it shows just the extent of commitment that some people have to running.
Yes.
Now, I know that, you know, with this pregnancy, we've been talking about that a lot. So if you're bored with it, you can fast forward. But I've had to, in the last couple of weeks, cut back significantly on my running mileage just because my center of gravity has shifted and I've been experiencing some knee pain and everything. And I've been experiencing some, you know, just kind of some psychological repercussions from that. I've just been feeling more depressed, just some things that I know that my body and perhaps my mind is, you know, addicted to running in a certain extent. I depend on getting that feeling, that stress relief, that runner's high.
That's what's been wrong with you.
Yes. I'm not crabby for no reason.
There's only one solution. You can't run. You're only going to get more pregnant until due date.
Yes.
So there's only one thing I can do, and that is buy you lots of chocolate.
Right. Of course, that could cause other problems down the road. Who is that blimp?
Might be harder to get in marathon shape after the baby's born.
Exactly.
No, you'll do it.
So, you know, it's been something I've been wrestling with, you know, mentally and physically the last couple of weeks. And it was interesting to do the research for this podcast just to see what was going on in my body and my mind since I've had to step back some from, you know, my normal running mileage.
Yeah, so you were one of those people who would cut off your leg if you had to keep running.
Well, it's hard to say until you actually get to that place, but, you know, I would probably do some fairly drastic things to be able to keep running.
We know. You're a fanatic.
So I guess I'd encourage you, if you're not to the point where you've experienced the runner's high or had those positive emotions, the positive physical feelings associated with running, just be patient and keep at it. You know, you have to start somewhere. Just keep going slow and steady. If you're doing the run walk program, you know, keep with that. I think probably the hardest part of running is building that running base, getting to where you can run 30 minutes continuously. Yeah. So, you know, don't give up on your progress or where you're at. You know, you may not relate to the things we've been talking about today, but just keep up the good work. You've got to, like I said, it's got to start somewhere, and you will start feeling the benefits eventually. I can't say where that point is going to be for you, but you'll get there. And if you're, you know, you've been running for a long time, you probably have your own experience with the runner's high and what running means to you, how committed you are to it. So keep up the good work and try to inspire others to begin their running journey.
All right, we've got one quick tip for all of you out there, and this was sent in by a listener named Justin, and it's an iPhone app called Runkeeper. and it works on the iPhone and also a couple other of those smartphones. And this is an application that enables you basically to have a GPS in your pocket and track your fitness activities, like how far you run, your pace, speed, even the elevation, even figures out the calories that are burnt, and then can upload your history of all the activities onto a website so you can share it with friends. So I know there's quite a few of these apps out there, but this was recommended by one of the listeners. So thank you, Justin, for recommending RunKeeper. And I know probably lots of you out there have an iPhone. And if you want to check it out, it's runkeeper.com. So, Angie, which app do you like the best?
I am embarrassingly low-tech, so I aspire to have an iPhone someday. But you don't have one either, so Nana. One is more decrepit than mine.
Okay, well, there's a Christmas present for me then.
Yeah.
All right. And if you would like more information on running and marathon training, please visit us at marathontrainingacademy.com. While you're on our site, you can download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. It's a solid overview of how to cross the finish line safely, injury-free, and be well on your way to running a marathon and changing your life. Oh, heaven let your light shine.